Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Saturday show. And we have a very exciting guest today, one of the nation's outstanding athletes, Buster Crabb, the screen's original Flash Gordon, who, by the way, is a guest this week of our company, Northwest Federal. And you can meet him and see him tonight at 8 o'clock or tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock at our community center. That's at 4901 West Irving Park Road. So make it a point to meet Buster Crabb, the screen's original Flash Gordon, outstanding actor and swimmer and athlete, and it's a pleasure seeing him and to see him look so great.
I question the word you just, outstanding actor, you said, Bob. You know, the type of work I did was basically for the youngsters, the kids that went to the movies on Saturdays. And I did a lot of them. I did 9 serials in all. At one time, they called me the king of the serials. Things like Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers and Billy the Kid, the westerns, and I did a Tarzan serial, a horrible Tarzan serial. But I enjoyed the work I did, and fortunately for me, a lot of people write me now that grew up with me, used to go to the movies on Saturdays, and I get nice letters all the time from people that that are my friends, I'm happy to say.
They had a great serial years ago on Saturday called The Million Dollar Mystery, remember?
No, I
don't
remember.
Maybe that wasn't all over the country.
No, I don't remember that far back, a little bit before my time. No, I really don't remember that.
Yeah. Well, that might have been just here in Chicago had that kind of exposure.
You know, a lot of people labor under the false impression that Johnny Weissmuller was the first Tarzan. He was not. He was Tarzan number 6. There was a guy by the name of Elmo Lincoln, who made in Morgan City, way back in 1918, chose Morgan City in New Orleans, you know, and because they had some stock stuff from Brazil, and they had to match the background of this stock footage that they had. Uh-huh. So they made it down in Morgan City, Elmo Lincoln, 1918. Johnny was number 6, and I was number 7. The Weissmuller, of course, is the best-known Tarzan. He was under contract to MGM for 12 years, and during that time he made 6 Tarzan films, the best-known Tarzan. And I think he made the best Tarzan films. I made a Tarzan film, a serial, in 1933. We made it on the back lot of Republic Studios. Now, Weissmuller's Tarzan had the advantage of having all of the stock stuff they did. They had a shot for a great picture, Trader Horn, with Harry Carey. You must recall this.
Yes.
They had hundreds of elephants and lions and tigers and all of that type of thing. Well, we had a couple of stock shots of some animals, not too many, but we worked closely with 2 animals, an elephant and a lion. Bob, the elephant was so old, he'd been retired from the circus, and the lion had no teeth.
Did Bill Bachrach, who they give credit for Weissmuller's start, play any part in your career?
No, not at all. He was a rival coach of ours. My coach was a fellow by the name of Dad Center. I'm part Hawaiian. I was raised in the Hawaiian Islands. I'm an 8th Hawaiian. No, Bachrach didn't. Bachrach found Johnny Weissmuller. People here in Chicago labor under the false impression he was born in Chicago. He was not. He was born in Pennsylvania. But the family moved up here to Chicago. And Bachrach was out in 1921-22, just happened one time to go to a local YMCA swimming meet and saw this fantastic big kid, you know, around 2019 thereabouts, years old, swim. Grabbed him right away, found out the situation with the family, so moved him in to live at the IC where Bachrach could keep an eye on him and train the fellow.
Oh.
And he came across, starting in 1922, he came across with a bang. He broke Duke Hanamoku's world's record in 100 yards, who, incidentally, was my god, the Hawaiian swimmer, Duke Hanamoku, by 2 seconds. And from then on, there was no Nelly bar at the door. The first time I met Weissmuller and Bachrach in person was back in 1927. The IEC team had gone to Honolulu to compete in the outdoor national championships. We were opening anew the War Memorial Pool, big outdoor pool, 110-yard course, 12 lanes. And that's the first time I met him and met Bachrach, too. Bachrach was handled Weissmuller well. Never let people get too close to Weissmuller, if you know what I mean. Uh-huh. Didn't like me at all because I was a coming kid at the time. I'm, you know, almost 5 years younger than John. 4 years younger than John, and he didn't like me much. It was only after Johnny stopped competing as an amateur and I stopped competing as an amateur that I got to know Back better. A good manager. Whether or not Bachrach was a good swimming coach, I don't know. The youngsters that swim today have the tremendous advantages of having the best coaching in the world. Every coach now, whether he turns out an Olympic champion or national champion or local champion, knows what the swimmer is supposed to do. Whether or not the swimmer, your local swimmer can do it, that's a question. But they know what goes on. Now, if I told you that swimming pools today are faster than swimming pools in the old days, you would say, Buster, you're looking your age, you're a little senile, wouldn't you? But it's true, swimming pools are faster today because of the... In the old days, a swimming pool had four walls with no gutters in it at all, made for a rough swimming pool. It was tougher to swim. It was like swimming in the ocean. And then they got the smaller gutters and then the larger gutters. And today they have a scum gutter that goes way under the deck. And then the water's taken down and comes back, returns to the pool from the bottom of the swimming pool, not from the surface anymore. They didn't have lane lines in a lot of the outdoor races in the old days. Now they have the big Adolf Kiefer came from Chicago, the big Adolf Kiefer lane line that smothers the wake of the swimmers. Uh-huh. They have today rule changes that are an advantage to the swimmers. For example, in the old days when we swam down a length, we had to touch with our hand, push ourselves around, and make a turn. Today they do a flip turn. By a flip turn, they save a yard. So if Johnny Weissmuller today was swimming the local swimmer and was able to hold him even between laps, the today's swimmer would be 4 yards ahead of Weissmuller at the end of the race because over and above the three turns in a 25-yard pool in 100 yards, the three turns he has, he gets out a yard further because they take off their diving platform now, their takeoff, the starting blocks, they call them, are about 30 inches above the surface of the water. So the swimmer gets out in the pool further, another yard, 4 yards, basically.
Buster, what's happening in the world of competitive swimming today?
Well, everything good for the United States, particularly for the fellows, the boys. For the women, too. There's a lot of this talk about boycotting the Olympic Games. I'm definitely against this. I don't like politics to be involved with the Olympic movement for one thing. But my basic concern is the youngsters that have been working all of these years, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, putting in 3, 4, 5 hours a day in the swimming pool to have that taken away from them by not competing in Russia is wrong. And every other swimmer, I'm sure. I read a thing by Spitz the other day, the seven gold medal winner. He's not in favor of boycott either. I'm not either. Let them go. I'll tell you why. Because if they don't compete in the Olympic outdoor summer games this time, 4 years from now, we're going to have the summer games in Los Angeles. There'll be 25, 30, 35 nations that will side with Russia. We boycotted in 80, the hell with it. We're not going to go out to Los Angeles in 84, you see. And for a lot of youngsters, it'll be too late for them. There'll be other kids coming along. They don't get a chance to represent their country. They don't get a chance to run the flag up the center pole, the stars and stripes. And this is a great thing.
Very good point. Yeah. Very good point. By the way, are swimmers born to a certain style, or is their style of swimming developed?
Well, the technique of swimming has made big changes with the new coaches coming in and everything. In the old days, we only pulled, and our arm drifted out. We only pulled the water. Today, they pull about 18 inches, and then they push, so that the today swimmer is getting a push and a pull of about 20 inches longer, Z. In order to do this, you have to be better conditioned, because it takes more strength. You have to fight it a little bit more. But the results, time-wise, and the world's records now, unbelievable. If you told me 10 years ago that some fellow was going to swim under 4 minutes for 400 meters, I would have taken you to the psychiatrist and had him, because I thought you were nuts. But it's true. 351 is the world's record for 400 meters now. I held the world's record for 400 meters, 448. And that was a top time in those days. I have had people come up, you said, your time doesn't compare. with today. Of course it doesn't compare. But I tell the person that said your time doesn't compare. But I was there. I won the gold medal.
That's right. That's right. Well, times in practically every sport have improved over the years.
Of course.
And everything.
10 years ago, 12 years ago, if you'd have said to me, you know, some guy's going to come along in 10 years' time and pole vault over 18 feet, I'd have taken you to the same psychiatrist, you know. Broad jumping at 27 feet is nothing. The world's record, the broad jump, 29 feet. They're running a faster mile. You know how long it took to break the 4-minute mile years ago? Years and years. Paavo Nurmi, way back in the 24s, held it at 4:10, and then Bannister finally broke it. 2 months later, a fellow by the name of Landy down in New Zealand broke Bannister's records. That was 3:57. Now it's 3:51. They're going under 3:50.
While
right, I've got a lot of girls here to know about the joggers.
You know, while pole vaulting has never been your specialty, what about the pole and its changes over the years?
Oh, yeah, that's a big advantage, of course. In the old days, they used a bamboo pole. Don Tarzan. Well, not as much as a bamboo pole. You know, the bamboo pole bends at a 45-degree angle, and that's what Don Bragg, who held the world's record in the pole vault, said. If I were pole vaulting today, forget it, you know, with the bamboo poles and everything. He was a great big... You know, he surprised me in that he was a big, big man for a pole vaulter, you know, big, husky guy. I'll tell you something else. He always wanted to play Tarzan. I thought he was crazy. You know, anybody that wanted to play Tarzan was crazy. Absolutely nuts.
Well, you certainly had a good swing at it and impressed a lot of people. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him at Northwest Federal, is one of the world's great athletes and swimmers, Buster Crabb. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment.
What do you think? Come see, come see.
I want to remind you that you can meet Buster Crabb at Northwest Federal at our community center. That's tonight at 8 o'clock and tomorrow Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So remember, meet Buster Crabb in person, get his autograph, and meet a very nice guy. Buster, as you review your own career, what would you say were one of the two highlights of your accomplishments?
Well, you're talking about my getting into the movies. I want to tell you something, Bob. I was never a guy that wanted to get into the entertainment field. I wanted to be an attorney when I was a youngster. I went 2 years after I'd got through high school. I went 2 years to the University of Hawaii. And I didn't know at my sophomore year what I really wanted to do. I worked as an office boy at one of the big companies in Honolulu years ago. And one of the fellas that... was a little further down, but was one of the bosses at the company, was a sports buff, followed baseball, followed football, followed swimming, and he had me, he was always a nice guy when I was in eighth grade and freshman in high school, when I worked as an office boy for the summer, and he had me in one day, and by this time I'd won some national championships and set a couple of records, and he asked me to have lunch with him, a fellow by the name of Jack Galt. And I really admired this fellow. He was a real nice fellow. And we had lunch together. He said, Buster, what are your plans? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, about college. And I said, well, I know, Jack, that I'm going to finish college. He said, have you ever thought about law? And I said, no, why? He said, if you go to law school and get yourself a degree, come back and get certified, I'll put you in our law department right here in the company. Well, for a young fellow, you know, 19 years old or something like that, to get offered with a big job at a good company like that, fantastic. My job was, because that's the situation of the family, my job was that I had to find a college that would give me a scholarship. And I found USC. They got me a scholarship because they were going to start a swim program, a swim team, and they wanted to get the nucleus of a swim team. So I got a scholarship there, and I started to go to, this was fine. I had to augment whatever money I made working on the beach. I worked as a lifeguard, took care of kids, gave good-looking girls surfboard rides and canoes rides, you know, all of that type of thing. And I had to augment it with something. So I took a job in the stock room of a men's clothing store. This was 1929. My weekly salary was $8 a week. Even in those days, $8 didn't go very far. And I struggled with this... Of course, in the summertime, I was back on the beach and went to the Nationals and whatever, whatever. And now we get to 1931, 1932. I was having an awful time. And fortunately for me, Weissmuller started in films out at MGM in 1930. He made a couple of thousand films. Now, Weissmuller and I, you know, were synonymous almost. Weissmuller, swimmer, crabber, swimmer. He was a sprinter and middle-distance man. I was a middle-distance and distance swimmer. He'd made two excellent thousand films. And as often happens in the picture business, every other major studio tried to find a thing like the Edgar Rice Burroughs Tarzan bit. Paramount came up with a thing that had been written by an Englishman by the name of Stoneham. Stoneham was a fellow that had devoted his life to the study of the habitat of the lion in Africa. He knew everything about lions. And with the success of Tarzan, he felt like he could write a Tarzan type of character into what he knew about the lions. Stoneham knew about the lions, but he couldn't have him raised by the apes. You know, Weissmuller was raised by the apes. Did you know that, Bob?
No.
Well, he was. You know, I'm only kidding. He worked with the apes. Well, I had to change a little bit. I was raised by the lions. I was called the lion, Casper, the king of the jungle. And Paramount went out to look for a guy to play the part. So they worked their way slowly, starting in March or April of 1932, slowly away across the country, knowing full well that they weren't going to start to film. Fortunately for me, not going to start to film until October 1932. Fortunate in that they landed in the crew from Paramount landed in the area, Los Angeles area, about 2 weeks before the Olympic Games started in 1932. And they sent a couple of scouts out to the Olympic Village. This incident, as you know, Bob, was the first time that all the nations that were competing in the Olympic Games were housed in one area. And they picked out 20 of the fellows off to take them out to give them a test. I think the only reason they picked Buster Crabb was that I'd swam for the University of Southern California. I'd competed for the Los Angeles Athletic. They knew me. So they said, well, we'll take old BC along with us. So I jumped on the bus this one particular morning. And out to the studio we went, Paramount. We were fascinated, you know. My favorite cowboys at that time were Tom Mix and Gary Cooper. And the first fellow I saw when I got off that damn bus was Gary Cooper, you know, with his cowboy going to work on one of the sets. I wanted to go over and shake hands with him, you know, fascinated by this great man. All the studios had big contract lists in those days. And we saw people like over and above Gary Cooper, Carol Lombard, Mae West, Bob Crosby, Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Burns and Allen,
great man.
Marlena Dietrich. You know, people are fascinated. Took us in, showed us all over the studio, and they knew these youngsters were going to, you know, we were all going to compete in the game. Very nice to us, took us in. None of us had lunch because we'd see somebody else come in that we knew on the screen. Then they sent us to get our wardrobe. So we went over to wardrobe. They gave us all a G-string and then put us on a bear set. And the director, Lucky Humberstone, he didn't know what the hell to do with these guys. So they took a photographic test straight on, right profile, left profile. And then Jack Mintz, who I got to know later on real well, he was an assistant director, came over. Lucky says, you have to have these guys do something. Says, what? No, nothing, you know, no jungle, just a bare stage, no backdrop, no nothing. Well, Jack said, get him to throw a spear. So they sent over the props, and they brought in a javelin, and we all took the spear, and we threw that off. They got to do something else. What? So they got a rock. It was about 3 feet by about 2 feet, weighed all of 5 pounds. It was paper mache, and the director, Lucky, said, for God's sakes, fellas, to make it look heavy. So we all struggled with the rock and threw it off. You see, that was a test. Back to wardrobe department with our G-string. Back on the bus, laughed all the way back. Then the business at hand. I didn't realize for years and years and years that 1/10 of a second changed my whole life. Now, I was worried. I'd completed 1 year in law school. I was worried about the other two. You know, not enough money and not enough time for my books. You know, having to worry about, can I make an extra $10 here? Can I make an extra $15 here? It was a tough job. All of a sudden, they drew, I'd won the games, you know, won the year 400 meters, they called me back. All of a sudden, I was an actor. Nothing could have been further from the truth. And they gave me some more tests. Now, the reason that I agreed to do King of the Jungle was $92. See, I worked for $8 a week in the stockroom, right? I got $100 a week, and in the way I had, and this is a bank here, right? Northwest Savings. That makes $92 more. And I thought to myself, a layout for a year. Save all the money I possibly can. The last 2 years I don't have to worry about where the rent was coming from, where the food was coming from, where the new clothes were coming from, where $5 on a Friday or Saturday were coming from to take my gal out dancing or something, right? So I clowned away. I got the part finally, and I did the thing. The thing that surprised me, and my agent was more surprised than I was, it was a 7-year contract, 1-year option. That means that they could bounce you any year that they wanted to. Is at the end of the first year, they took up my option. And then you start to think, maybe if I study some of this stuff, all of a sudden I lost the, you know, about the 2 years more, and maybe I could become a big movie star. Maybe if I study some of these fellas that really know how to act. So, kicking away the first, because I thought they would get rid of me, they took up my option there for another year. I picked out three on the lot that worked on the lot. Melvin Douglas, Frederick March, and the great foreign actor by the name of Akim Tamarov. I think I learned more from him, the timing of the man, his looks. He wouldn't spout a line right away. He'd look you in the eye first, then turn away and a lot of times read the line. One of those things. I only made one A picture. That was the first one. The studio finally decided I was a rough and tumble guy, through the windows, you know, falling off the dock, running W's, breakaway furniture, and that's what I did. Serious for the kids.
Sorry. You know, you were talking about Spears. I have to tell you a funny story. It just occurred to me. Many, many years ago, they ran an ad in the paper. There was an opera at the Auditorium Theater, and they wanted bit people without experience. And a buddy of mine, Bud Healy, and I went over and got a job as spear carriers. At one stage of the first act, he crossed from one side, and I crossed to the other carrying a spear. Well, when time came for us to carry the spears, we were in the corner drugstore having a ball.
So you,
that was the end of our
career. Yeah. Lost
that
job
was
right
the end of our
line.
Career, believe me. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him. By the way, you can meet him here at Northwest Federal, and I know you'll enjoy it as much as I have today. Buster Crabb will be here tonight at 8 o'clock, and he'll be here tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. So make it a point. I'm sure he'll be happy to give you a photograph and an autograph, and you'll meet a very nice guy. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, and our company is host this weekend, to Buster Crabb, a great athlete and a great swimmer. And we're enjoying very much chatting with him here today. I understand that you're working on a book.
No, not working on a book, Bob. I wrote a book about that came out about 4 years ago. Playboy Press did the book for me. You know, I've always been a kind of a nut about physical condition, you know. Try to take care of what God started you off with by watching your food intake, by a certain amount of exercise, that type of thing. I won't go into that because it's a long, involved thing for a lot of people. I read every good exercise book and a hell of a lot of bad ones, too. And I finally found out that most of the exercise books were aimed at the younger guy and the younger girl, 25 to 30, 35 to 40. The hell with the older people, 55 and 60 and 65. My fraternity, see? So I did something about it. I wrote a book called Energistics. It's a good book. I had a lot of very good things in the book, and I repeated many, many times in the book that the best exercise of all was swimming, particularly if you're older, because as you get older, you get calcium deposits all over you. You start to get little aches and pains, arthritis, bursitis, rheumatism, whatever, right? Get in the water, because in the water, your body's weightless. You have no weights on any of the joints at all. And you can set up yourself an exercise program in the swimming pool. I wouldn't have put this in about the swimming 20 years ago. But everybody can find some place to get in the water now because there are pools all over the place. And then more recently, I wrote a book for people that are really, and I have bursitis in both shoulders. I have to really warm up before I do anything. I wrote a book called Buster Crabb's Arthritis Exercise Book. And that'll be out on the stands in April. It's a good book. And they give me a lot of credit for this book, but the doctor that I worked with, the Dr. Rafael Salento, is the fellow that did the work, because he's a man that dedicated his whole life to trying to help people. that had that have arthritis, rheumatism, bursitis. And what are you nodding about? You want me to get off, right? Bob, it's been great working with you.
Well, it's been great being with you today, and I want to remind our listeners again. I want to ask you one last question. I've heard swimmers referring to swimming on top of the water. What are they talking about?
Oh, that's for the birds. You tell anybody that can swim on top of the water, boy, they'll set records.
They can walk on top of it, huh?
Yeah. No. There are certain swimmers that are lower in the water. Uh-huh. Certain swimmers, you know, because of the pool, particularly in the shorter race, they try to swim higher in the water.
I see.
But this is a difficult thing to do. The middle distance and distance swimming gets a little lower in the water, but they're doing the same job with them.
We've enjoyed ever so much having you as a guest. And I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed it as much as I have.
And congratulations for your induction into the Hall of Fame.
Thank you. Our guest, Buster Crabb, a great athlete, great swimmer. And by the way, you have a chance to meet him in person tonight at 8 o'clock and tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock at our beautiful community center. If you've never seen it, it's at 4901 West Irving Park Road, and it is really a beautiful auditorium. So remember, 8 o'clock tonight, 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So we've enjoyed ever so much having Buster Crabb, great athlete, great swimmer, and a real nice guy as our guest here today. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.